Christina Lake Cannabis is using proprietary outdoor genetics to grow and harvest cannabis in Western Canada. And with a 99-acre expansion, production should increase from nearly 72,000 pounds to a harvest capacity of over 194,000 pounds of high-quality, refined cannabis to extract exceptional THC and CBD oils. This cannabis highlight has been brought to you by Christina Lake Cannabis, U.S. trading symbol CLCFF and Canada CLC. ChristinaLakeCannabis.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor from the surface of the planet Earth. We're going to a cosmonaut who's on the planet Earth who's speaking factually about space and how it is for professionals. He is a cosmonaut scheduled for the ISS. That's the Russian side of the ISS. But he's been fired, or he's quit, or he's no longer with the program because he objected to movie making in a scientific engineering marvel. Bob, a very good evening to you. When I first read this story, I was sympathetic immediately towards the cosmonaut. He's a sober-minded man who wants to do the right thing, and yet space is turning into an exhibition for the well-to-do or for geopolitical rivalry. That is not the original understanding of space exploration.
No, I don't actually agree, John. The situation here has less to do with hostility generally to commercial space, or even if commercial space is the wrong thing to do in space. I don't agree with that. And nor do I think space is just simply, you know, let us explore, go where no one has ever gone before. It is what people individually wish to do. And if people want to make movies in space, that's okay with me. If they want to be tourists, that's okay with me. It's all good. That's exploring space by people following their dreams. What happened here, though, is that the cosmonaut involved, he's actually a retired cosmonaut, and he's actually one of the most celebrated cosmonauts in Russian history. His name is Sergei Krikalev. He's now 62. He was the first person to fly in space who was born after the Sputnik mission. He was born in 58. So he, in that sense, he's unusual. He was born before, during the beginnings of the space age, not before. He also was the first Russian to fly on the space shuttle during the 90s. He was the first Russian, along with an American, to enter ISS's first module soon after launch. And he has spent of about 800 days in space. And he's most famous as being the last Soviet citizen, because he got stranded on Mir when the Soviet Union fell in 1991. When he launched, he was a citizen of the USSR. And when he returned, his country didn't exist. He was now a citizen of Russia, and he had to stay up there 3 extra months. Well, this guy, I interviewed him extensively when I was writing Leaving Earth, my award-winning history of manned space after Apollo. And he was very fluent in English because of the time he spent in the United States on the shuttle. So he was good to talk to, and he was quite willing to give me several days of time. He's a very, very thoughtful and analytical engineer man. He knows his stuff, and he thinks in detail. And that's why, after he retired as an astronaut, he moved into the Roscosmos senior management to operate their manned missions and to provide supervision and intelligent management of those missions. And he's been there for like 20 years as their manager, as their main manager in running their missions. But I also discovered when I interviewed him, he's also still, and he probably still is, an ardent communist. For example, when he was on Mir, Coca-Cola had hired him and his partner to do a commercial on Mir where one of them would be filmed drinking from a Coke can designed for zero gravity. Well, Krikalev, who was not the commander, told his commander he refused to be the actor in that. He will not be seen in a commercial for Coca-Cola because he was a communist. He didn't believe in private capitalism, so he ended up filming it, and his boss did the drinking on air. So I'm not surprised he has a certain hostility to commercial operations on ISS. But I don't think here it's the specific commercial situation that he is mostly hostile to. You got to understand that the commercial film that's being brought up to ISS on a Russian Soyuz, it involves an actress and a director. Those two individuals are making a movie in which is partly owned and being partly produced by Roscosmos's head, Dmitry Rogozin. So there's some almost certainly payoffs and corruption involved. Rogozin probably said, you want to make a movie on ISS, you're going to have to make me one of your producers and pay me bucks. And I'm sure that's a factor here that Krikalev doesn't like. He also doesn't like that this was improvised very quickly, and it meant that a Russian astronaut couldn't fly that was planning to fly. And so Krikalev is concerned about their half of the station and managing it. So what's the deal here? I mean, the real issue is what kind of corruption is going on in Russia with Dmitry Rogozin? That's really the question in my mind. It's very fishy that he's the producer of this film that's going up there, John. And Krikalev's objections might be very valid.
You know Krikalev. I do not. My first reaction was I like the guy and I liked his stance. And here's why, Bob. What you say is convincing. But something about this reminded me of the way Branson used space. Making a movie at ISS. And all right, fine. You know, I'm a little fussy about it, but I don't regard
monetizing. There's nothing wrong with making a movie, but when there's fishy things involved, like with Branson and here with Rogozin, then you're absolutely right to be skeptical, and so is Krikalev.
And Krikalev can take care of himself. He's a quality guy, so good for him. Yeah. Let's go to real commercial space. This is Bezos, Mr. Amazon. And they have a winner for the seat at Blue Origin. And who is – we don't know the winner. Is that right, Bob? We just know the number.
At the moment, we do not know who the person is who won this auction. But just to give a quick review, Blue Origin has its New Shepard suborbital spacecraft. And they announced about a month ago that they were going to fly their first commercial flight – in which, by the way, Jeff Bezos and his brother Mark were going to also be passengers, and they scheduled it for July 20th, and they announced that the passenger that they would take on this commercial flight would be chosen by an auction. You'd bid on who would go, and the high bidder would get to go. And so they had a series of phases where first it was a secret bid, then it was an online bid, and then they finally, over the past weekend, had a live auction. I've got the video of that auction embedded on Behind the Black if you want to watch it. It started out at $4.8 million for the seat, and the bidding was really fierce and aggressive, and it ended at $28 million, which is actually just under $30 million when you include the fees that the auction added to the price. Now, what's really spectacular about this $30 million price, is it's one third higher than what Dennis Tito probably paid, or we think he paid, to go to ISS for almost a week in orbit back in the 90s. This is a suborbital flight this person is going to pay for. They're only going to be in space for at most 10 minutes, at most. It's probably going to be less than that. The whole flight will be about 10, 15 minutes total. But they're paying $29 million. I think one of the things I wondered is maybe the person who's paying this is a rich person. The value of spending a lot of time with Jeff Bezos, one of the richest men on Earth, might be more valuable than the actual flight itself, and they're paying for that time. That's part of it. Either way, it does also add, you know, are they getting a good deal? Well, they're getting the first suborbital commercial flight. There's something to be said for that. But I will tell you this, they're probably overpaying by a lot, because I suspect that the tourists that are flying on SpaceX's first commercial orbital flight in September are probably paying less per person, probably. So that's the story there. It's a good deal for Blue Origin. They sold the ticket, and they're going to fly July 20th, and that'll be the first privately funded and privately built commercial space flight.
Northrop Grumman is back in the booster phase, working for the military. What's significant here, Bob?
Well, okay, Northrop Grumman in less than 3 days launched four military satellites, three on one and three on another, using two different rockets that the company now controls. They purchased in mergers Orbital ATK and Thiokol. Thiokol built solid rocket boosters, and Orbital ATK built the Pegasus air launched rocket. And so Northrop Grumman is now a launch company, and they haven't been doing very many launches, but in less than 3 days, they put up these two launches with two different rockets. And so then now getting into the game more seriously, and I think that's a good deal. They also lowered the price for the Pegasus rocket, which means they're either trying to sell off their inventory because they can't sell it anymore, or they're trying to make it competitive again. And that's a good thing, John. It just means capitalism space is just beginning to boom more and more.
What is the SLS?
All right, SLS is the Space Launch System. We've talked about it endlessly. It's one of the most wasteful boondoggles that NASA has, that Congress mandated. It's a big rocket that's supposed to take us to the moon, but it can only launch maybe once or twice, once a year at the best, probably once every 2 years. Costs billions and billions of dollars. It's taken more than a decade and a half to build. They just completed a test of its core stage, static fire test of its core stage at the Stennis Space Center in Mississippi. And the story here is that the most recent NASA authorization that went through Congress included an amendment from the Mississippi Senator, Republican Roger Wicker, which will require NASA to build a special SLS core stage for only one purpose, endless testing at Stennis. This is purely a jobs program. This core stage won't be being tested for launch. It won't be being tested for design futures. It just simply will be tested over and over and over again so that they can justify the jobs at Stennis. It's really, this is really, in my mind, the worst sort of earmark.
Earmark, yeah, that's it.
We reintroduce
earmarks to the language of space exploration. Bob Zimmerman keeps the website Behind the Black, and we're headed to Mars. We've had enough of engineering for a moment. We want a payoff. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Christina Lake Cannabis is using proprietary outdoor genetics to grow and harvest cannabis in Western Canada. And with a 99-acre expansion, production should increase from nearly 72,000 pounds to a harvest capacity of over 194,000 pounds of high-quality, refined cannabis to extract exceptional THC and CBD oils. This cannabis highlight has been brought to you by Christina Lake Cannabis, U.S. trading symbol CLCFF and the Canada CLC. ChristinaLakeCannabis.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.